Boom. What's up, Ed? How are you, man?
Great.
Thanks for coming here, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for extending the invitation.
Well, I love your Instagram. It's very informational. And well, tell everybody what you do so people get a handle on this first.
I'm a non-permissive environments specialist. Basically, I teach people how to live, move, and travel in places where they probably shouldn't be traveling. You know, how to get out of handcuffs, how to get out of zip ties. You know, I show people how to survive in such environments. My background is in law enforcement in Mexico. So, you know, I spent a lot of time down there. Over the years, that's kind of led me into teaching myself how to survive in that environment. And apparently, after a while, that made me kind of sought after as far as teaching other people how to survive in such environments. So I've been doing that for a while here in the U.S., military, law enforcement, civilians.
Yeah, and you started working in law enforcement what year?
It's 2004.
So you started before everything got really crazy in Mexico.
Yes. So you can kind of trace back where it officially kicked off by the start of the Felipe Calderon's presidency, which is the second to last president we had. He basically said, you know, full on war against the cartels. And by that time, I was kind of just getting done with my training in northern Mexico as a police officer. And what I thought was going to be, you know, community policing and stuff like that turned into a full on, you know, here's a assault rifle and just go climb up on that Humvee with those military guys and let's go arrest cartel members.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So you thought you were just getting a regular law enforcement gig?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, there was no such sort of kind of job description. This was post 9/11. I was actually in med school and that the economy and all over the border with the tightened security and stuff like that kind of went down, you know, down the drain. And most of the money that I was using for med school, you know, went away. And, you know, that in the newspaper, young, unmarried individuals that don't have any kids, you're welcome to join type thing.
Wow. Young, unmarried individuals with no kids. They want that specifically.
Yeah, that was probably a big alarm bell should have sounded in my head. But there weren't a lot of opportunities for somebody my age there that didn't have a career. And I thought it would be, you know, everybody said, don't go, you know.
But yeah. I would have said that. If I was your friend, I'd be like, Ed.
But it was a challenge. And a lot of people said I couldn't do it, and I did it. And then it turned into something that wasn't what most people expected when they went into it. You know, it was a full-on urban warfare type situation.
Wow. So post 9/11, the borders get tightened up, and the economy gets very bad in the border towns. Is that what happens? Because people can't get through as easily?
It's heightened security. So commerce isn't as freely done on both sides. Border waits that used to take an hour now would take 3 hours or 4 hours, depending on the time of day. So, you know, things got affected. Also, you know, a worldwide recession situation kind of happened. So everything kind of went down the toilet. You know, I have a lot of family in the border region and all like most of our family businesses that we had, you know, basically kind of tanked during that time.
So from 9/11 to here we are 18 years later, it's been a pretty radical change.
Yes.
Is that safe to say?
Yes.
100% change? Like what if you had to like try to describe it?
So, I mean, basically, the part of the country that I had most of my experience is the Baja, Sonora, Juarez type region, northern Mexico, basically. What happened is that all the cartels started fighting for the most rich drug routes on the planet. One of them, of course, being the city.
This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Guys, you're responsible for taking care of you, and that means spending some time cleaning yourself up. But I know that can be a challenge, especially when you're not sure what products or razors to use. So to help you get started, I want to recommend Manscaped. They can help you take care of all your grooming needs, even when it comes to your more sensitive areas, or as our friends at Manscaped like to call them, the boys. their trimmers, the Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, 4.0 Pro, and 5.0 Ultra are all equipped with skin-safe technology to help reduce the risk of grooming accidents. They're also waterproof and come with an LED spotlight so you can actually see what you're shaving. And I know that summer's coming, which means vacations and traveling for a lot of you. Well, Manscaped has you covered. Their trimmers come with a convenient travel case that you can easily pack and bring along. For the best you and your boys have ever looked, trust Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ROGAN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code ROGAN at manscaped.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Skin-safe technology does not guarantee cut protection. This episode is brought to you by Mizzen and Main. No matter where you're listening, no matter what job you have, the clothes you wear to work say a lot about you. And if you're wearing boring, stiff, uncomfortable dress shirts, well, now might be the time to ditch some of the dated, boring styles in your workplace wardrobes. And that's exactly what Mizzen and Main is for. When I wear my shirt, I feel like I'm not sacrificing comfort for style. Their performance fabric dress shirts feel just as good as they look, and you could put on a Mizzen and Main and dress for the job you have. You will see it hanging in your closet and genuinely get excited to put it on. And if you're still dry cleaning your dress shirts, you're living in the past. Welcome to 2024, where Mizzen and Main has the world's most comfortable machine washable dress shirts. Mizzen and Main invented the performance fabric dress shirt 10 years ago, and they've practically perfected the thing. It's lightweight, breathable, moisture wicking, wrinkle resistant, and the most comfortable shirt on the market. Whatever you do and wherever you wear it, know that you'll look and feel amazing. Shop now at mizzenandmain.com and save 20% when you spend $130 or more using the promo code Joe Rogan.
If Tijuana. So the city of Tijuana is, that's the corner of Latin America. It's the most cross-border on the planet. And with that, you know, there's a lot of commerce that goes on in that region. A lot of things get shipped to Tijuana and then driven up into San Diego. And a lot of people have business on both sides. And among all of this movement, you know, there's a giant organized crime war going on. It used to be overt, like on the streets. Middle of the day, you would see these cartel convoys arriving at a restaurant, and all the cartel guys outside with their AKs and stuff like that. This was 2004, 2005 era.
What is the military or the law enforcement attitude towards that? Like, how do they handle that?
So we go back to 2004 when I first got it started, and it would look the other way.
Really?
Yes.
Look the other way.
Look the other way.
That was specific instruction that you got?
It was one of those things where I went there and I got a firearm. Here you go. Here's your Glock 17. Here are your two magazines. Here's your Mossberg 500. And you see all those cars over there? We don't ask them for anything. Let them pass. That's, you know, we don't do anything of that nature. And then we'd see members of the military as well kind of go the other way type of situation. Mm. This is 2004.
Do you think that this was just to avoid conflict, or was it because of corruption?
It's always corruption. I mean, at all those types of levels down there during this time, there was a lot of corruption. Things changed, but, you know, things in a way, in some levels, are always the same.
Mm.
There was definitely some sort of pact going on, some sort of fear-based pact during that time. And when Felipe Calderon finally said, you know, enough is enough, we're going to declare war, he basically militarized a lot of the counter-narcotic efforts in Mexico. So the military went from being, you know, in their bases or manning stations out there to actually actively going out and looking for cartel cells and trying to eliminate them, right? So basically army on the street type situation. And another thing he did was basically a lot of the police chiefs around the country were being traded out for former military officials or military guys, officers. One of them was Lieutenant Colonel Lizaola. I don't know if your audience could look him up. He's a very famous lieutenant colonel from Mexico. Actually has a documentary on him called Mexico's most bravest man. Pretty interesting guy. He was the one that headed us up. He directed us at the start of these operations against the cartels. And he basically said, you know, this isn't a policing problem. This is a counterinsurgency problem. So we're gonna militarize it, basically. And after he kind of took control, everything in it changed. You know, the cartels weren't as overt as they were, so it started going underground.
So when you joined, you expected it to be regular law enforcement. When it became this counterinsurgency, militarized effort against the cartels, was there every time where you were like, I got to get the fuck out of this job? Like, this is too dangerous.
My generation, I was part of the seventh generation of officers going through this program, policing. And out of my generation, the first year we had two of them in jail for corruption charges and three dead, you know, just from,
out of how many?
Out of 23 guys.
So out of 23 guys,
two in jail,
five gone.
Five gone. Two of them, very dramatic. That's two of them were kind of the origins of how I got into the whole counter abduction type thing. Two of my guys got picked up outside of a hotel in the downtown Tijuana. And by cartel members dressed as federal police officers, the whole nine yards, the uniforms, the car, everything cloned. They got asked for their papers outside and got put into a van. They found them a day later, you know, horribly, you know, mutilated and all this type of stuff.
Tortured,
you know, and that kind of, you know, that was the, this.
This
should,
is real.
This is real, and I should probably have a, you know, escape plan.
Yeah.
And but it wasn't I didn't know anything else, basically, so it wasn't like I had something to fall back on,
right? So,
and it was good pay for what it was, and yeah, but fear, that's when fear got, you know,
the stress must be insane.
Yeah, it's, you're always on, you
yeah
know? There's a, you know, we always had this thing on the meeting wall. It said there's no vacation even when there's vacation, you know. You would go on vacation, and you would get your gun to go on vacation.
Of course.
You know, it was pretty insane.
Now, have you ever been confronted?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not, you know, I have a lot of friends that are in military up here in the U.S. And it's not like them. They go off overseas and they do something in a different country with different people with don't speak the same language. I was doing all of this in the place I grew up.
Ooh.
Right? So, so I knew some of these people at times, you know. Every now and then I would say, hey, I know that guy from when I was a kid. Or we were in school together. And now he has a plate carrier with an AK-47 and a gold gun on his pants, right? And it's like,
whoa. The gold gun's a big giveaway.
Oh, gold guns are, you know, that's how you know.
Yeah, there's some amazing websites that document all the different stuff that the cartel has, but they love gold guns.
Yeah, that's, El Chapo got like a very special gold gun when he was named one of the top earners in the Forbes list. I think he got his number on the gun and everything. The second to last time he got caught, because he got caught a lot of times and escaped. Somebody in the military that got him took it, you know. And it ended up in the museum. I think it's in a museum somewhere in Mexico City, where a lot of these gold guns end up. That's a war trophy for those guys, right?
So there's like a gold gun section of the museum.
Yes, there is. Mexico City.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Gold gun, gold AK-47s. You know.
Now, if everything is so corrupt down there, how does a guy like El Chapo keep getting popped? I mean, because when I saw his escape,
yeah,
I was like, this is hilarious. The fact that this guy goes to the toilet and then he opens a door and whoop, he's in a tunnel and on an electric scooter and goes a mile, pops up on the other side, and they had everything set up for him with electricity. Like,
I think the thing that people kind of don't understand about the corruption is it's not just corruption because people are greedy. It's also fear-based corruption. So if you don't do what I say, we're going to kill everybody in your family, even your dog, that type of thing, right? Mm. So after El Chapo got escaped that last time, you know, all of the staff at the jail got, you know, put in prison. And you
really?
Know,
so they were all part of it?
There's rumors that they were, you know. Mm. You know,
seems like somebody had to hear all that digging.
Of course, you know.
I mean, it's only a mile away. They dug the tunnel.
It was pretty deep.
Yeah.
Some things that should have been patrolled weren't patrolled. It was a pretty good, well-made tunnel for what it was.
Really, you know? Well-made.
So a lot of the people that El Chapo actually used for these tunnel operations, because the same people that he used for the tunnels in the border region, all the active tunnels that are somewhere, you know, along the border, all of those guys were pulled in from silver mining companies that used to operate all over Mexico. That kind of went into the toilet, so they were looking for jobs. And
wow, get El Chapo out. It's a good job.
That's or drug tunnels, you know.
When you saw all that shit go down with Sean Penn and Sean Penn visiting El Chapo and Sean Penn writing an article for Rolling Stone, like, oh, were you like, what in the fuck is going on here?
Yes. For some reason that might not be, you know, mainly was, why are they giving him this celebrity status?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of glorification and a lot of, you know, people venerating some of these people down there, you know, and they do a lot of harm, you know, so that he's basically giving a voice to somebody. It would be the equivalent of somebody up here giving a voice to somebody that was, you know, responsible for a lot of damage that done to the U.S. You know, it's,
why do you think they did that? Like, what was the romance? It was romantic, right? There's something about it. It's like, here's Sean Penn, one of our biggest movie stars.
Yeah.
With one of the biggest drug dealers ever.
I mean, he is El Chapo down, because I've been to Sinaloa and I've actually done classes there, which was pretty surreal. He's a folk hero. He's Robin Hood basically to these people. And like, when this surreal moment that I had down there, I was driving along this bad bumpy ride highway, and all of a sudden it turned into a nice kind of highway. And, the guys that I was with told me, oh yeah, this is the cartel made this highway, and the back part of it, that's the government part of the highway. This is the good one. You know, schools, careers, lawyers, doctors, all their careers paid for.
By the cartel.
Immigration processes of people that want to come over here, sponsorships and all that type of stuff on both sides, right? So the span of influence, that's, you know, that's how he kind of got to where he was. You know, he was always helping people and he was investing in people. And these people, these investments would pay later on, you know.
In a lot of ways, it sounds like he benefited them. He benefited some aspects of the community.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why the military couldn't get him, people could say corruption, but because he had a human shield around him. You know, all these towns owed, you know, schools, hospitals. Every, instead of Christmas down there, they celebrate the Day of the Kings, you know. So he would get presents. Mother's Day, they would all get presents, that type of thing. So why would we want to help the military come in here and get El Chapo if he's doing this type of stuff? You know, that is the same all over Mexico with some of the cartels. You know, the hearts and minds type approach is what makes some of these groups, you know, long lived.
So how much of an effort is there to eradicate the cartels? Because if you can get a guy like El Chapo, who at least in terms of like popularity is at the top, is he at the top of the list?
As far, like, as popularity?
He's at the top of the list as far as popularity. But as far as like the actual drug dealers, is he at the top of the list, or are there more clever folks that hide underground?
Yeah, there's rumors of people above him that are still out there somewhere.
Yeah, that's what everybody, like, that's the great conspiracy, is that like El Chapo is basically the bank manager.
He has a compadre. You know, a compadre is somebody that if you're the godfather of my kid, you're my compadre, right? So he has a compadre out there, El Mayo Zambada, and he is still out there, right? And the extent of how he works and where he works is unknown.
So he's more slick.
Exactly.
He tries to stay more low key.
Well, there's, you know, some people get sick with the fame probably, and they want to go outside,
Well, once that TV show Narcos came on,
yeah,
then I think there's a lot of people who did not realize how crazy the life of Pablo Escobar was.
Yeah,
and what really went down in Colombia.
Yeah,
I mean, it's crazy.
Pablo Escobar was a single, you know, he was a phenomenon in his time and age, but he was one man. Now imagine replicating that type of insanity over the span of Mexico, and it's about 8 or 9 guys, you know.
Mm.
That was the 90s, early 2000s, because these guys were, you know, Legion of Doom type thing, where they would be enemies, but they would have reunions and they would meet up and kind of agree on, you know, certain
terms
things
and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like in the Pablo Escobar show.
Yeah.
So they really do that. They get together and have meetings, and sometimes they kill each other.
That's a reality. You know, they do at times, or did at times, because things are currently, after El Chapo, you know, things kind of shifted and changed.
What happened?
Well, main thing is a power vacuum. And with a power vacuum and legalization on this side of certain substances like marijuana, the pot fields are now poppy fields, and new things like them now dedicating themselves to heroin instead of the weed, which, but mysteriously, there's still weed fields down there for some reason. You know, you guys are way better at making it than anybody down there, but for some reason there's still some weed fields.
Well, I think it's a lot of it is access, especially in the states where it's prohibited.
Yeah,
it's just they're probably more willing to get it to the people.
That's probably it. Meth precursors being brought in from China to Mexico, or now being made in Mexico, like industrial level stuff.
Right.
And a new upsurging cartel down there that is trying to overtake the Sinaloa cartel, the new generation cartel, is coming out of Guadalajara. And they're kind of really militarized kind of wing of cartel activities that are trying to, you know, take control over the whole thing.
What is the plan in terms of the government? I mean, if they can take out a guy like El Chapo, what is the plans to eradicate all this? And is there really a plan to eradicate it? Or is it one of those things where it's sort of a plan on paper, but realistically they sort of accept the fact they're never going to get rid of these people?
So I have a thing like basically Quetzalcoatl was a feathered serpent. And I have an image of a feathered serpent biting its tail. Mexico has a problem with amnesia, a 6-year cycle of amnesia. Every president comes in, has all these plans to eradicate the cartels. President goes out, nobody likes him anymore. New guy comes in and says, well, I have a better plan, you know, and that's the cycle we always go through. You know,
so it's a big issue in Mexico.
Yeah. And currently we have a leftist president that doesn't want to have anything to do with the past administration. They are more on the right of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. His name is Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, vocally supporting Venezuela, that type of guy. Apparently, he has a good relationship with Trump. That's what people say. But his whole thing was amnesty for the cartels. That's a campaign promise.
Amnesty?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
Exactly. Nobody knows what that means.
But that's what he was saying? Did he have a plan for this amnesty, or is it just like a statement?
It was a statement, and now if you see counter-narcotics operations throughout the country, the military is not as active as it used to be.
Whoa.
Some of the cartels are growing in influence.
Because of amnesty.
Could be, you know. Basically, I don't see the efforts that were there when I was active down there.
Oh, geez.
Things change, you know. So I don't know. I truly think that the upsurge, because we're on route to having the most violent year in Mexico as far as cartel related deaths, right? When I got out, Tijuana had been on the top most dangerous cities on the planet list, and I actually worked there when it was on the top. And through efforts both from the government and through people like Lieutenant Colonel Lezaola, Tijuana was gone off the list of most dangerous cities in the world, and now it's again at number one, right?
Yeah, you sent me that. I was pretty shocked because you don't hear about that here.
Yeah, it's 6 murders a night. You know, I was down there 2 days ago, and it's basically cartel on cartel. So they're cleaning each other out, and just bodies appear in the morning. You know, on bridges, hung from bridges, tortured, shot. You know, that's, you know. But again, there's nobody's doing anything about it. It should, you know. But they're kind of turning a blind eye in a lot of ways.
Oh man.
And so with this leftist president, this guy who has this idea of amnesty, the people that are in charge of handling the cartel, the military and the police officers, they've got to feel like a little abandoned.
Yeah. Or maybe some of them will have a business plan and they're working at one side.
Oh, know? So that's a problem too.
Yeah. So people that aren't aware, you know, we have a separation of powers down there as well. So the army constitutionally shouldn't be engaged in combating the cartels. They shouldn't be engaged in police roles. But there were some amendments done to the Constitution and, you know, laws passed. But you have to realize that some of these people that are fighting the cartels in a policing type role from the military, some of them can't read, right? Or some of them come from rural parts of Mexico that shouldn't be doing that type of activity. So you get a lot of, you know, a lot of failures on that side of the fence. We do have some high-level SF community members in Mexico that are doing the work, but they're few and far between. And then you have the federal police, which has gone through about 4 or 5 name changes in the past, you know, 10 years. Because every time, not going to call them that, change the uniform because they're all corrupt.
Jesus.
But now they're this police, right? So...
So they just change appearances.
They change the name, you know, but
like, try to refresh the public opinion of it.
Yeah, there was a famous, investigation, federal investigation police called the AFI. And they were like modern investigative federal police that's going to go after, and they were corrupt as hell, you know. And all they did was, you know, get a name change, and all these guys got shuffled around. And later on, I was like, hey, I know you. Like, what? Now? No, I'm this now, you know.
But yeah. They're still the same person who compromised.
Yes. Yeah. So those are the federal guys, right? Currently, they want to do like a national police force. And you're like, wow, they're going to get new people that are going to be national police force? No. It's the same guy. Just change your uniform. Change your hat. So that's on the federal side, you know? So we're pretty, you know, wanting there. State side, each state has their own police force, investigation police force, and a preventative type force. And these are politicized because each state government may be opposed to the federal government. So there's some static there now. And each municipality has its own police force, and they might be completely different politically than the state and federal. So
it must, for you to have your life on the line over there and see all this chaos and obvious either lack of organization or outright corruption, it must be insanely frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, putting people in that were clearly guilty of things, you know, and then seeing them come out, or the legal system down there that I had to endure. You know, you would have to go and do a face to face with all these people, right? Go into a federal courthouse, leave your firearms behind, do a face to face with these people inside that you just got for however many tons of cocaine or pot or whatever, and then go outside and they're outside, you know. Now I know who you are, you know. There's no anonymity in that regard, so you would have to sign things, you know. And then seeing some of the people that were with you working on your side and seeing then how some of them would fall into corruption charges and then sue the government and then get your jobs back, but now you have somebody that's compromised within your own unit.
Wow.
Right. So they did try a few things to try and clean out police forces. One of them was a plan they called the C3 plan. It was like a filter for police officers down there. It's still in action, but you know, it's questionable if it's effective or not. I saw a lot of people go through it, and later on they would turn out to be cartel guys. Basically, they would do a background check, FBI background check, polygraph exam, drug testing. All of these things to see that you were, you know, clean to work on these police forces. The problem is that the polygraphs turned out to be unconstitutional to fire somebody over them. So a lot of these people got hired back after they would fail a basic polygraph exam. So again, it's a lot of attempts to clean it up, you know, and you would be on the level, and all these people wouldn't be on the level, but they were still there. So
like what percentage of people are not on the level, if you had to guess, roughly?
I mean, I'd say it would depend. I'd say 30% probably.
That's a lot.
On my experience of the people that I worked, that 30% weren't on the
level. You must cherish the 70.
Oh, like family.
Yeah.
Like family. And you would know when some of these people weren't on the level because, you know, I have this running joke that I have this. I went in with the same car that I drove out of the office with, you know, a shitty truck that I had that I bought when I, you know, off my own dime, first car. And I drove out of the office when I quit the job that same day. You know, I drove out of the office in that truck. But a lot of these guys would come in with their, you know, Hummers and H2s and just weird cars. So like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Oh. Like, we are working the same office. Why do you have a 3-story house?
That's so obvious, though.
Prove it, you know?
Yeah, but the obviousness of it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The blatant. You're driving a nice car, living in a big house, and everybody else is like, what?
Yeah. There's obviously these unwritten rules of, you know, you wouldn't tell on this guy,
right? Of course,
but you know, it was obvious. And,
yeah.
And when it came time to share information of a certain kind, or we're going to go over here, and you would have to turn around and look around, see who was listening, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't trust a lot of these people. So how are we going to do our job if we can't trust the people that are working with us?
Well, who was it that recently called for decriminalization? Was it your president that called for a decriminalization of all drugs in America to go along with Mexico? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
To try to do something about the cartels.
Yeah, we're on the brink of legalizing marijuana in Mexico right now. Like, there's been a few landmark cases, and, you know, it's gold rush type situation right now. There's a lot of companies down there that have had experience up here that want to go down there.
Right.
So the culture is ready for it, I think.
Do you think that would help?
I don't know. When it comes to legalizing pot up here, it hasn't helped down there. As far as lowering things, it's actually made things kind of worse.
How's it made things worse?
They changed what they were producing. So
they went to meth. Yeah.
The reason why there's a heroin epidemic up here and fentanyl epidemic up here, I think has some relationship with how things got legalized up here and how they switched product down there. Mm. So lighter colored heroin is coming down from Mexico. And I work with law enforcement up here in the U.S. Doing classes and kind of, you know, they send me things like, what do you think about this, Ed? And I've seen that lighter colored heroin pop up in places as far off as Chicago.
That's you. So you know it because of the color?
Yeah, the color, the smell, the consistency, you can kind of tell if it's Asian or Mexican.
Is it a different strain? Like,
it's probably a different strain, and it's also the amount of sun it gets in the region where it's being grown. Mm. It's higher altitude, so it's lighter color, not as stinky. I don't know. But I think it's a relation that kind of relates to the legalization issue down there. It didn't affect them in the pockets. They just switched product.
It's such a strange relationship, because the reason why these drug cartels have so much power is because they're selling drugs to the United States.
Yeah.
So it's like you have this connection to this country that has this great big wall that it wants to build. And on one side, everybody's buying up all the illegal drugs. And the other side, everyone's killing everybody to try to make and sell these illegal drugs.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of holes underneath that wall.
Yeah.
And drones.
Yeah.
Drone technology.
Is that wall going to help anything?
Well, the wall's already been up for a few years.
Part of it.
In places like Tijuana, which is like one of the richest drug routes on the planet. And the drugs are cost the same, you know?
It's the same.
It's, yeah.
And what about, like, the ocean? Can't they just take a boat?
I've seen one large submarine in my time working.
Really? Large? Like military size?
Like scientific size.
Where the fuck does somebody buy a submarine?
Online, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
You can buy a submarine?
You can buy a small submarine for a small amount of money. I think the main part of the submarine ownership is maintenance. That was the reason we found it, is that it wasn't properly maintained, so it
sunk.
Yeah, it actually floated, couldn't sink.
Oh,
and it had a bunch of things hanging off behind it.
But submarines scare the shit out of me. You can't see where you're going.
Well, I've seen submarines, drones, like a squadron of drones with a bunch of loads on it, you know, wow. Flying.
How heavy can a drone get and still fly?
I've seen full like 2 kilos on it.
Really?
Yeah.
So just flying the coke over the top.
Yeah. And the only reason I found out about those is one of those crashed in a roadside next to the border fence.
Were you around when that CIA drug plane crashed in Mexico with tons of cocaine on it?
I wasn't there, but I was aware of that situation.
What the fuck is that about?
I mean, realistically, there's a lot of Americans running around in Mexico.
Yeah.
That's in.
And there's a lot of cowboys, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people say, listen, we just make this one run. They're like, the government doesn't give a fuck about us. My pension sucks.
It could be, you know.
Could be.
You know, every now and then, you know, and this isn't a secret. Every now and then you would see a dude out there that's blonde, tall, and has a bunch of tattoos that don't belong down there, working on the military side of things in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Or some dudes doing something someplace and then you would get a call, you know, oh, they're fine, just, you know, just leave them alone type thing, you know. So who knows, you know, who knows.
So if it's 3 out of 10 were corrupt where you were, it might be like 1 out of 10.
I have no idea.
CIA guys,
you know, usually we would get to, since I have a pretty good spoken English, I would get sent places for training or for liaison work with some people that would go down there, and I would never know where the hell some of these people were from, you know.
Mm.
So who knows, you know.
Well, it seems like it's very loose, like there's a lot of room for fuckery.
Calderon era, Bush administration era, there was a lot of stuff going on. Obama administration era, after the whole Fast and the Furious thing, things kind of went dark for a while.
Yeah, explain the fact. A lot of people don't know what the Fast and the Furious is. It was they had sold guns to the cartel under the guise that this is the way they would track the guns.
Yes,
it seems so fishy.
Oh, I learned about it from CNN, and a few of my friends were killed with some of those guns down there. Which is, you know, everybody talks about the U.S. agent that was in Mexico was killed by some of these guns, but there was a lot of, you know, Mexican agents and people, civilians killed by these guns as well. So there were very specific types of guns, you know. So like, imagine somebody giving you a shopping list about types of guns you want, right? Mm-hmm. Including in these lists were 50 cal Barrett rifles and FN57s, which are it's a pistol with a very high velocity round that goes through soft armor, like the type of stuff that was issued to us, right? So all of a sudden we're seeing these space pistols in the hands of the cartels in very specific parts of the country. We're like,
but what a preposterous idea that they're going to sell it to the cartel so that they could track them.
Well,
like, that sounds like horseshit to me. That sounds like someone was trying to make money and they said, oh, we'll just say we're selling it to them to track it.
Well, the suspicious part is that all of them went to one specific cartel, the Sinaloa cartel. So Oh, he should have.
He should have.
I mean, there's blood. You know, there's people died. There was a, and I can't say the name, but somewhere in Baja, a little girl lost her arm. An agent that was a friend of mine got killed, and the wife got killed with FN57s that directly related to that whole thing. Right, so.
You can go to jail for fucking tax evasion, but, and this guy can get away with that. Just the idea that you would run that by people, and they would go, yeah, good idea.
Yeah,
give them guns.
And to be clear, I don't know the realities of that operation on this side. People say it was happening way before. All I know is that when that happened, nobody told us, and there was definitely some weird resentment on part of the government down there.
That's
and
sick.
Some people down there, as far as, you know. And there was some weird conspiracy theories going on as well down there.
How could there not be?
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a conspiracy theory right in front of your face.
Yeah.
The fact, oh, yeah, we just sold them the drugs or the guns so that we could track them.
Yeah.
No one's going to die. It's not like a bad idea.
The main thing you would hear is people were...
Settlement. Fast and furious executive privilege lawsuit between DOJ and House.
Yeah, this is how it ended or wrapped up. Within the last 2 weeks, I guess. Yeah.
Really?
It's just
this
some
is
settlement.
Just wrapping up?
Yeah, just some settlement on March or May 8th.
Wow, because this is from, what, 9 years ago? 10 years ago?
Yeah, at least. And the guns are still showing up, so I don't know how many of them. I've never known what numbers, but last time we found some, and I actually have images of the ones we found. They were buried in somebody's backyard inside of a water barrel. And all of them were obviously U.S. Origin guns. And like, well, what do you mean? All of them had very specific accessories on them that nobody else in the world puts these accessories on their guns except the U.S. because they're pretty ridiculous accessories.
Like, what kind of accessories?
Things that had things, letters on them, like see you in hell type things on them. And Punisher skulls.
Punisher skulls are the big one, right?
Yeah. And
that is hilarious that a cartoon skull has from a Marvel comic book has become a gigantic part of Spec Ops.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty ridiculous. Well, the main rumor down there, like conspiracy theory wise, and you would hear all sorts of things, you know, because down there there's no such thing as top secret clearance in Mexico. You know, there's like, hey, don't say anything. You know, that's about it. You know. So you'd hear crazy, crazy things. Main thing was that the U.S. was planning an invasion. You know, they're destabilizing the region so they can put boots on the ground.
Oh, Jesus!
You know, that was the like a going conspiracy theory going on.
The U.S. invading Mexico.
Yeah,
how fucking crazy would that be?
Well, you know, as far as a reaction on the side of Mexico. This is purely speculation and the weird rumors that I would hear. People were planning to poison drug loads on that side to create a health crisis in the U.S. as a reaction.
Whoa.
Right? That was pretty, like, when I heard it, it's like, holy, who's talking about this shit, you know?
Full-out war almost.
Could be, you know? And then you would try to see, well, who's doing that? You know, the cartels? So the cartels and the government are the same thing? Like, what's going on? You know?
Right.
And again, this is just weird stuff you would hear.
This is a crazy perspective, right? The cartels would poison the drugs to punish the Americans for the military invading the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To create a health crisis in the U.S. So they would, you know, have to go back.
Wow.
I mean, the rumors, you know.
Do they know how many guns they brought over?
I've heard all sorts of numbers. We never got told a
single. Jamie's got a number. Nearly 2,000 firearms were illegally purchased for $1.5 million, according to the DOJ Inspector General report. Fuck. Hundreds of guns were later recovered in the United States and Mexico.
Yeah. 50 cals were... So and it's always an escalation with the cartels, right? So they would get AK-47s, and we would get German-made G3s that were around the same caliber, and we could fight back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of our leadership started rolling around in armored vehicles. So let's get 50 cals to, you know, make holes in these armored vehicles. So it's always been an escalation, you know.
Jesus Christ, you guys were getting 50 cals so you could shoot holes in the armored vehicles.
So the cartels were getting them first, and then we had to get them because they were rolling around in armored vehicles. So Mad Max type armored vehicles. They would make them like homemade Mad Max armored vehicles. they found a few. They're online somewhere. One of them was called La Bestia, which is like a giant. All that was missing was the guy with the guitar on the back of it, you know, like Mad Max. And they would use these to roll into town, and like, how would you fight that, you know?
Right.
And then
so you had to get a 50 cal.
Or get the military to shoot them from the sky. You know?
Oh, my God.
You know, there's a famous video from somewhere down in Mexico where they shoot a Vulcan rifle down at a cartel member in a car, an armored vehicle. But then you see, checkmate government against a cartel. But then you realize that the cartels, like the New Generation Cartel in Guadalajara, have actually downed helicopters in Guadalajara military helicopters because they have anti-aircraft capabilities.
Jesus Christ.
So then you, now you're like checkmate cartels, you know. That's how.
Where does this go? Like where I mean, how far does it escalate?
That's the thing that, you know, you have to think about. The so killing and death is not at the industrial level that is being done in Mexico. Not just killing, but, you know, disappearing bodies, making bodies disappear. I was around when they got the stew maker. The stew maker was a guy that worked for the Sinaloa cartel in Tijuana, and he would get rid of bodies using caustic soda, right? So he would get bodies every night, and he had these basically these industrial level just barrels of it just going.
What is caustic soda?
It's a chemical mixture. Yeah, you can get most of the components at a hardware store. Basically, it dissolves bodies. You know, and he would get some of this mixture. He said in interviews that he got trained by Israelis that how to do that. So who knows if that's true or not? But in the night, he said he would get rid of, you know, dozens of bodies, and this gets rid of everything. You know, DNA, bone, everything. So there's a lot of families in Mexico that are looking for their kids for years, and there's just no way of giving them a body. And the amount of youth that goes into cartel work and just gets, you know, killed there. It's just, it's whole generations and whole towns of women and old men. You know, they're out there. Wow. Which is like whole generations just gone. You know, all the men in the, you know, gone. I've gone to a few small towns where like they looked at me like youth. You know, a young man. It's like
so. It's rare.
At some places it is
because the men are all getting killed.
All getting got in the you know, in the cartel operations and killed or just recruited. You know, forcefully recruited or, you know, voluntarily recruited, but, you know, whole generations just wiped out.
Now, the people in your line of work, the people that are boots on the ground who really understand the problem, what is the thought in terms of what could be done to fix this?
I think main thing is any sort of plan to fight the cartels that involves just a 6-year plan won't work, because that's what the main problem has been with Mexico. Each president.
Is that what your presidential each term is 6 years?
Each president comes in with a 6-year plan. He either does really good or does really bad, and then it gets forgotten, and another one comes in. And there's also definitely an addiction to money from the U.S. side for counter cartel operations. There's a Plan Merida, it's called. It's a international plan where the U.S. pays for counter-narcotics type operations in Mexico. So there's an addiction to that money on the side of the government. So there's a lot of interest for that to keep going.
Mm. You know? So they don't want to resolve the problem as much. They want to, like,
in some ways, you know.
Yeah.
They refuse to professionalize the police forces down there. They don't put enough effort in that regard. You know, good people that are there that I know there's some amazing guys down there doing amazing work. And they get passed up for promotion because they don't know anybody high level. They don't work for either side of the game, you know. So a lot of these people just get cast aside, you know. And you know, it's kind of hopeless in that regard. You know, a lot of the good guys when they come out of the job, there's only a few options to them, right? I had options, but a lot of the guys that go out of the job don't. So they get recruited by the cartels, right?
Did anybody ever attempt to recruit you?
Yeah, yeah. You get offers. You know, you get offers.
What kind of offers?
There's a famous corrido, which is like a Mexican folk song, called "I'm Going to Talk About My Past," right? And it's a pretty interesting song. It's about a cartel guy that used to work as a cop, and somebody from his past approaches him and says, "You want te quieres aventar un jale? You want to do a job?" You know. That's what you would get, you know, people within the police forces asking you, you want to work on the side?
Mm.
You know, that was the entry, you know, and, or, you know, we'll pay you this much.
What is it like when you say no?
It's pretty, pretty hard. it's not specifically saying no. But just saying, I'm not the one to ask for this. And you say, you know, I'm not the one to ask for this. You know what? I'm only in this for the money of for my paycheck. And, you know, I don't want to risk anything. So,
and how do they leave that?
They don't, they're not happy usually, you know? So if you get on a list sometimes and, you know, something that follows you, but it's a much better thing than actually getting into one of these guys' pockets.
Mm.
You know, once you take something, you're theirs. You
right. Know? Like the mob.
Like the mob, you know, a lot of these guys actually took, you know, they have a lot of these cartels down there. They kind of venerate the whole gangster era in the U.S. It's like a thing.
Oh,
so it's like a thing they look up to, you know?
Right.
So like you see a lot of gold plated Thompson machine guns down there. You take pictures with them.
So there's a lack of professionalizing the police force.
Yes.
And that you think is a conscious effort.
I think it's so
you keep them fairly incompetent.
I think so. You know, a lot of ways we were as a group, the group that I used to work with, there was a lot of efforts to professionalize us to like getting a career path to actually being making it a career. There's no right now where I used to work. There's no pension. You know, there's no retiring.
Wow.
If you want to get any sort of a credit for anything, the credit companies won't even touch you because you're too high risk, you know.
Too high risk because you might get shot?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it is the most dangerous city on the planet, right? So they wouldn't touch us. And realistically, culturally, being a cop in Mexico is, you know, male porn actor and cop are probably along the same range as far as shame, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. We wouldn't eat at any restaurant that we didn't know the people, you know, because it would spit in there. There's hate. You know, it's hate. Or
why they hate cops so much?
As a culture in Mexico, police culture in Mexico has earned it. You know, a lot of guys working both sides, a lot of guys being, again, the whole, you're going to be a cop because you know somebody in there and people that shouldn't be in any sort of public service.
Mm.
So there's a lot of corruption, a lot of things done wrongly by the cops, a lot of abuses, you know, a lot of human rights violation type situations. So it's earned, you know.
So the big shift over there in terms of crime, in terms of cartel crime, occurs first with September 11th, the tightening of the borders. Then it starts to ramp up after that because of what?
The government first started targeting certain cartel heads. You cut one head off, Hydra, you know.
Yeah.
Two heads, three heads pop up.
Power vacuum. People fight to try to gain power.
You know, and the cartels realize, you know what, that we are standing on the richest drug routes on the planet, so we should probably, you know, start fighting over them.
Yeah.
And also what happened is that, you know, a lot of these people, it's something that Americans kind of don't get yet. This isn't a Mexican problem anymore, specifically, as far as the cartel violence going on. A lot of these people had their kids up here in the U.S. in the 90s. A lot of these cartel guys, you know, El Chapo had kids in the U.S. And a lot of these people are now coming of age, you know. So cartel influence in the U.S. is a thing you're going to start seeing, if you're already seeing it, but you're going to see more of it because a lot of these people are actually American-born U.S. citizens now working in tandem with any sort of interest down there. So that's going to be the new shift, you know. And, you know, people are sometimes kind of horrified by some of the stuff that I post up, some of the cases down there. Mm-hmm. People can look up the Los Palillos gang in Southern California. There were an actual cartel group that would kidnap people in the U.S., dressed as federal agents in the U.S., and drag them back down to Mexico. Now, this happened a few, almost 9 years back. But this is happening in the U.S. You know, it's not something foreign anymore. You know, a lot of people want to think that you can build a wall and keep all that down. Don't get me wrong. Build that wall. I have nothing against it. But selling it as a security thing I don't think it makes that much sense in a lot of the parts where it is up. Violence is rampant on both sides.
But if the argument would be that if the wall didn't exist, then it would be too easy to come back and forth.
Okay.
At all spots.
Yeah, it could, you know, but again, drug tunnels, catapults,
yeah,
drones,
for drugs. But in terms of like kidnapping people and a lot of other things, you cut off at least some of the vehicle routes.
I get it. I think I'm not against the wall, you know, build the wall. I interviewed a guy, I do articles for a few magazines, and I interviewed a guy who's it's a coyote, you know, coyote. He moves people from the border. And he said this about the border. I asked him in the interview about the border wall. He said, it's good for business, you know. You make something seem like it's harder when it isn't, and it's good for business.
Wow, so you say, listen, I can't get you over 3,000. It's got to be 5 now.
Yeah.
It's tighter.
Yeah, or fly him to Canada and they walk down, which is that was his one of his new favorite methods, you know. So
Northern United States probably got a lot of Mexicans now.
Yeah.
The Canada border is hilarious. It's a path.
Yeah.
It's a carved out 100-yard path. We put pictures of it up the other day. We're like, look how hilarious this is. The difference between Mexico and Canada. So, Canada, they make it easy to know where the border is. Like, just get across here, eh? Yeah. You'll be fine.
It's no Mexicans, you know?
Yeah. It's really strange.
Well, I mean, it's the amount of creativity and problem solving that goes on the criminal side, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If your best plan is a wall, of a secure wall, these guys have been working against that best plan for the past 20 years. So they're already way ahead of the curve, you know, in that regard. You know, there was an interesting time in drone, and people can look this up. Drone technology had an upsurge in innovation in Tijuana, out of all places in the world, for a time, you know. Like, why?
That's funny.
You know,
I wonder.
And what they were doing with those.
What could be done to radically curb this?
You know,
like, if you were the king of the world, said, Ed, what are we going to do?
First off, legalizing some of the substances would probably help. That would help a lot. That's a pretty good question.
But even some substances that are legal, like fentanyl, is essentially legal because you can get a prescription for it. But you're never going to have like fentanyl just over the counter. It's just too deadly.
You know, another thing that, you know, I think about, and that's a very good question. I wish I could answer it.
I think everybody wishes they could answer it. But everyone just sort of like shrugs. And
so the cartels aren't just a drug-fueled business. They also have money that is in property and legitimized businesses. They work in human trafficking. Like, they act, if used to be, you can cross that border and go to the desert and cross it yourself, but now you have to pay a toll. Protection rackets across the on both sides of the border. Sex trafficking, piracy, like you name it, they have hands in it, right? So.
So they just essentially took that drug money and just
diversified.
Created a crime business.
They diversified. You know, they've been diversified for a long time. Like, there was recently three cartel members from Sinaloa in Malaysia released, out of all places. So just think about that. Two Sinaloa cartel guys somewhere in Malaysia got caught somewhere, and now they've been released, and they got like a hero's welcome in Mexico.
They got a hero's welcome?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, Sinaloa, that, you know, again, Sinaloa is a pretty, that's, I have this nickname for Mexico. I call it the upside down, you know, because everything's, you know, basically upside down now.
Right.
And these guys got, funny thing is that the Mexican government was involved in their release. And then they, you know, sent them back, and, you know, hero's welcome. What were they doing all the way over there in that part of the world? I don't know, you know, diversifying. You
know, diversifying. So no one has a real plan. Here it goes. Malaysia pardons three Mexicans on death row. Oh, they were on death row. Damn.
You want to talk about a kick-ass corrido, like a folk song sung about you? Those guys are probably going to get an amazing folk song, you know.
So there's a lot of romanticism connected to the cartel.
I mean, it's romanticism, it's religion. There's definitely some occultism involved in a lot of the higher ups in these cartels.
I can remember when I found out about the narco music. These, what are those songs called?
Corridos, the folk songs. There's a lot of them, you know. There's and all of them have a secret language in them sometimes, or they're all a history of something that happened. And you pay somebody to make one for you, or somebody makes it for you. And then if you do a good corrido song for somebody, and the rivals will send somebody to kill you, you know.
Really?
So, like, even the musicians are on either side of the cartel kind of groupings as well, which is pretty weird, I know, but it's...
Wow. So if you're for the wrong cartel, like if you make a song, you kind of have to like go into hiding,
or not play in any places where the rival cartels, you know, territories are.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Will they come to your territory to come get you if you
there's been a few high level singers, Mexican folk singers, that got their, you know, killed. For messing with girlfriends of cartel members, or for singing the wrong song in the wrong place.
Wow.
So that's in the culture. And the religious occultism the cartels have as well. You know, it's a pretty interesting thing. Things like Santa Muerte, the death cult that is kind of in different parts of Mexico. It's like think of a very dark Freemasonry type thing, right? Certain levels, you have people that are part of that cult, from the cops to the military to the cartels. It's kind of to prostitutes, to drug dealers. It's interesting how that kind of also has an influence on the way some people go into very risky businesses, like being cops or cartel guys, and how they wear or empower themselves by some of these occult iconographies, you know, like a reaper, there's the Trinity is Jesus Malverde, which is it was a folk hero from turn of the century, Sinaloa, basically a bandit that got caught and killed, and he turned into a saint. And now there's a giant church to him in Sinaloa with a bunch of money stuck to the walls, and pictures of guys in the U.S. with like a F-150 truck or a Hummer, like, thank you, Malverde, I'm living the dream now because of you.
Wow.
Two roadside altars with a statue of the Virgin Mary, and then you look behind her and there's a reaper behind it, because it's a hidden Santa Muerte shrine, and they do that so the military doesn't destroy him, because they have standing orders to destroy these things, which shouldn't be, but, you know, it's kind of religious persecution, but they actually do that.
It's so different than the United States.
In a lot of ways it is.
I don't think we understand, like, all this stuff. Like, I think the average person has no idea about the songs, no idea about the culture of it all. They have no idea the depth and how deeply it's connected to society down there.
I mean, the death cult worship is, I think you could probably trace it back to the Aztec days, right? So there's definitely, when you see all these highly violent, bloody cartel executions and things like that, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think there's some sort of genetic memory from those times. It's not abnormal physically for some of these people to do that type of thing. You know, ripping somebody's heart next to a tree is like, there's videos of that stuff out there. I remember getting contacted by people that I knew on this side of the border in the U.S. That were very curious why all these people from the Middle East were looking at all these cartel execution videos. And then a few years later, you had ISIS doing some high production execution videos that were inspired by the cartels, you know.
Wow. So isn't it interesting that we don't think about that? We think about, oh my God, look at ISIS. They're cutting people's heads off. What did they learn from Mexico, which is connected to us by land?
It's right down
there.
You
can fucking walk there. Yeah. Like, you don't have to fly to Afghanistan. You could walk there. It's not in Libya. It's near La Jolla.
Yeah.
You go to La Jolla, you see these fucking multi-million dollar estates with this gorgeous view, and everyone's driving Ferraris and Porsches. 20 minutes drive. You're in Tijuana.
Yeah, the most violent city on the planet right now.
That's so crazy.
There. Yeah. And
when I go to San Diego, that's one of the first things I think is what a juxtaposition. how crazy it is that this is the border to Mexico, and it's all military. San Diego is filled with fucking SEALs and Rangers and Marines and bases, and it's just all military down there. It's so military influenced, and it's right next to the most violent, dangerous city on planet Earth. More than Karachi, more than Pakistan.
We were insured by MetLife, and the MetLife agent said something along those lines, like, you're better off going to Afghanistan or Iraq than, you know, working here, basically, numbers wise. And I was like, oh, thank you for that, you know. that felt like a good pat on the back.
But it seems like they're getting cartel on cartel crime confused with regular person crime.
So, but that's how it always starts, you know. Mm-hmm. It's usually starts off, and again, this goes back to everything cyclical down there, that snake eating its tail. So you get cartel on cartel crime, and then they finish each other off, and then they realize, well, now what do we do? So they start abducting people. Extortion.
Just for money. Just
extortion comes into play, you know, protection rackets. Cross us guy, now they're very bold, that now they're at the party somewhere and somebody looks at them funny, so they come back and they shoot up the whole party. I like your daughter, she's pretty hot, I'm gonna steal her, and if you do something, I'll kill you, and you're never gonna see your daughter again. That's how it starts, you know. That's how it starts kind of growing.
Just bold, brazen, that's cruel.
That's how you get it, you know?
Sociopathic.
That's how you get to that point. And it, again, I experienced it back in 2006 era. And I saw it get into all the way to when the whole of the municipal police were they basically, the army surrounded the municipal police office of the police at Tijuana, and they took all their guns, and a few of them were taken on a plane ride to Mexico City, and for a few weeks there was no armed police in Tijuana, the municipal armed police. Imagine somebody disarming the whole LAPD, all of the LAPD, and just having the army in there instead, you know.
Wow.
So you would see these events, and then things calming down, you know. The only success story as far as a city coming back from the brink was Tijuana, when all that like the raging drug war went down. Lieutenant Colonel Lizaola, the guy that I used to work with, he took numbers down, like everybody down in Mexico. He got hired then on to go to Juarez to try and replicate his success. The only successes were there because he basically treated the problem as a counterinsurgency problem, not a policing problem.
Mm.
And he got 9 attempts on his life. The last one took the use of his legs, and he's currently running for mayor of Tijuana, believe it or not. And he's in a wheelchair, but he's still. I wouldn't want to mess with that guy.
Wow.
Myself and some members of my family are actually helping out with his campaign. But he's, you know, one of his campaign offices got shut up recently.
So, is there any plans or is there any push to try to treat the entire problem as a counterinsurgency problem to replicate the success that they had in Tijuana?
No, that was a solution brought in by the right side of the political spectrum in Mexico. So it's a no go right now because everything's to the left.
And this guy just got in office?
He has a few months in. So yeah, he just got into office. So
you got 5.5 more years of this dude.
We're in for a ride. That's all I can say.
Yeah, kindness doesn't seem to work. When you're dealing with cartels, it seems like.
No, you give them a hand, and it'll take your feet. That's a Mexican saying. You
know? Man, for you to have been in that business and to sort of be connected to it but outside of it now, it must be incredibly frustrating, but it also must feel futile, like you've wasted time almost, because there's no progress is ever going to be made.
I have a weird experience that I had. I burned about 2 acres of pot somewhere in Baja, right? Towards the end of my career. And then things happened politically, a bunch of shakes up at the office. I got called in, and the director of the institution that I was in at that time was a shady character. And I decided to say, you know what? my mom had just passed away, and that kind of affected me a little bit, a lot of it, you know, and starting a family and stuff like that. And, you know, it said, you know what, this is not worth it. So I left, quit my job, handed everything in. And, people were suspicious about why I did it, you know, like you probably found $1 million somewhere and you're
right.
running or shit like that. Right. So I had to leave in a hurry, you know, got a few threats.
Wow.
Luckily I had some great people on this side of the border, friendships that I've developed for a long while. And they helped me out, you know. I went to Denver about 2 weeks after I got done with the job, and an old lady handed me a special cookie at one of the dispensaries. And I saw the people walking in, you know, and it's like, is this what I've been, you know,
right.
burning and chasing people in the middle of the night and looking at drug planes and violence and all this. This is a lady with a cookie.
Now it's a store.
It's a beautiful store in Denver.
There's a store in front of LA, in front of the Improv, that I have to put a video up because me and Andrew Santino were there last night making fun of it. I'll send it to you, Jamie, right now because it's so ridiculous. They have shit under glass, like you're looking at art pieces.
I mean, again, I don't know why they're still producing pot in Mexico when you guys have it in the stratosphere as far as an art form.
I'm going to send you this right now, Jamie. Yeah, well, they definitely have it down now. But it's just, it shouldn't be illegal in the first place. That's not hurting anybody. I just sent it to you.
There's a bunch of, there's large shamanism and occultism all over Mexico, and mushrooms have been used down there for like forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, growing up and stuff like that, you would see it. And it was, you know, the demonization comes from the conflict around it, not that itself.
Right.
You know?
Well, there should be real demonization when it comes to things like fentanyl to just whack. Look at this. To turn the volume up so we can hear this.
People don't understand the state of marijuana in Southern California.
I'm inspecting the crystals, Joe.
They leave
the crystals
behind a magnifying glass. This is no bullshit. These are all in glass, so you can look at the crystals. Because a lot of these marijuana dorks are like wine dorks or any other thing where people really get into it. You take it too far. When you're looking at weed under glass, if Joey Diaz would be here right now, he'd spit
bullshit,
in your mouth.
Bullshit, cocksucker. Fuck this shit.
He'd spit right in your mouth. If you try to have weed under glass like it's a fine Chardonnay or some nonsense. What is it?
It's just weed, man. That's all it is. It's just
right.
fucking
Andrew
weed.
Andrew Santino speaks the truth. It's just weed, man.
That's some Antique Roadshow type level stuff.
How
right?
ridiculous is that? They give you a magnifying glass, and they had all these displays with the, this is a hybrid. This is an indica strong hybrid. This is a sativa strong, sativa dominant.
How are you supposed to smell it on that glass?
Good question.
Yeah, that's
right. The rice stores have a little jar that you can smell through.
It's a very good question.
Yeah, we would just grab all of it, machetes, and just put it in a big pile. And
just chop it up?
And look,
light it up.
Where's the
fire?
Wind coming? From over there? Well, I'm going to sit over here.
You know, wow.
Yeah, you know, you would get it passed after that, so it was fine.
You got to get a little fucked up.
Oh,
burning all that stuff.
Of course,
secondhand smoke.
Peanut butter M&Ms. That was my thing.
Was there a sense of frustration when it was legalized in so many states in the United States?
In some regard, yes.
Like, what are we dying for? What are we fighting for? Why have I lost brothers?
Exactly. You know, a lot of people were killed over finding tons of pot somewhere, and now it's fine.
Yeah, now you can just buy it.
And it's, I mean, but you know, the frustration isn't with the pot itself. Again, it's what happens around, the politics around it, the amount of money invested into fighting it, and violence and interests around it. But the plant itself, again, my mom used to grow it and put it in a jar with alcohol and rub it on her muscles, you know, and. You know, it's a thing. You know, it's always been there. And
yeah.
all of a sudden, you have full auto machine guns protecting it in a grow somewhere, and full auto machine guns in another place. People coming in there to burn it because you shouldn't be selling it. And it's just while I was doing it, you know, my mindset was these are bad people. When I started, you know, these are bad people that are doing drugs. And later on, I was like, just a plant, stinky plant. So people are smoking it. And never in my life did I encounter a hyped up, you know, pothead that wanted to fight, you know? So I was like, they should make this exclusive. Everybody would calm down. Different coke is different, methods different.
Of course.
But, you know, pot.
When you were talking about how everyone with a 6-year plan, it's not going to work. It's never going to work. It seems to me that with the romanticism of the cults and the way that it's ingrained in the culture and that they look at these people like folk heroes, that this is a generational problem. It seems like many generations before it changes and calms down. And I would struggle to think of what would be the thing that could cause it to calm down. Like what could be the catalyst for change?
Yeah, and more so than things kind of things are getting even more complicated now with migrant caravans going through Mexico now. And now you have all these displaced people from South America now adding on to the problem of an already existing.
How big is the caravan? We hear about it on the news, like from Fox News talks about it, like scare tactics.
Okay, so I don't know, and people can fact check me on this, but I was probably one of the first ones to publicly say that they were going to go, the first caravan is going to go straight to Tijuana. Everybody was, nah, they're not going to go straight to Tijuana. That's just too far off. They should just go to Texas. And they went straight to Tijuana. And, you know, they were about 3,000 strong when they got there, maybe a bit more. And, you know, a bunch of memes came up because of it. As they were going through all of Mexico, most of the people were pretty welcoming because they weren't going to stay. You know, they were like, you know, here's a water. Like when somebody's doing a jog, a running marathon, they would hand a water bottle and, you know, good riddance. They finally got to TJ, and TJ is very conservative. Like politically, it's a very conservative place. And they met with a wall of protesters wearing Make Tijuana Great Again hats.
No.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes. Yes. And I may or may not have produced a few of those myself and handed them out. And all of a sudden, you see the mayor of Tijuana with a Make Tijuana Great Again hat on his head.
Wow.
And the reason why they were so adverse to these guys coming in is that they were, a lot of them, gang members, you know, 14th Street gang members. The reason why they didn't go the other route is because they would have to have crossed Los Zetas territory, which is a cartel that has problems with the 14 gang. So they were just curtailing that.
Mm.
They were complaining about the food they were getting at the shelters. This is a third world country feeding third world migrants, and we were feeding them tortillas and beans. And there's a famous lady that was like, I'm not going to eat this. This is pig. You know, it's pig meat.
Look at this. Make Tijuana great again.
So it's trolling on another level.
Wow.
So these guys came in, but people started calling the people from Tijuana racist. The brown people from Tijuana are racist against other brown people.
Wow.
And you would see some of the news agencies from the U.S. come down, and volunteer groups, hippies, you know, with sending all their donations to these people in some of these migrant caravan camps. They would grab the donations, turn around, and sell it on the backside. You know, all of these things they would sell on the backside. So we had just absorbed about 2,000 or 3,000 Haitian immigrants after the earthquake in Tijuana. No problems at all. They're integrated into the culture. All of a sudden, now we have Haitians in the culture, you know, no problem at all. But these guys came in, they were really kind of disruptive in that way, right? So,
you know. Do you think it was because of all the attention they were getting?
Yeah. That's what they wanted. You know, they wanted to create some sort of situation on the border. So they rushed the border a few times. I was around there when the famous picture of the lady with the kids running towards the border happened. They were throwing rocks at the border patrols, the border patrol guys, and that's, you know, they got the gas in response.
And that's when she was running away.
Yeah, and they had a lot of people there
throwing rocks.
Yeah, they threw rocks constantly. That was their thing. And
it's funny how a photo can give you a totally different perspective.
Again, anybody that's doubting any of this, go down to Tijuana and ask the people from Tijuana. The Tijuana people did not want those people there. They saw them as disruptive. Crime went up. One of the encampments that they have was next to a school. The school had to be shut down because of all the needles and stuff that was getting found outside of the playground in the school. It was a mess, a nightmare. And then we would see it on the news, and it was like flowers and, you know, on the
narrative.
The narrative was like, well, I don't know what these guys are talking about.
Well, Trump is such a polarizing figure that anything that would would be anti-immigration like that, like anti-they just don't even want to hear it.
But they, you know, the weird thing is how so a lot of people Mexicans like Trump, you know,
yeah.
Which is
really
well, yeah.
Why is that?
I think the whole I'm going to defend our people type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's
they like that,
yeah. And a lot and people have to remember most Mexicans are very conservative, you know, Catholic conservative guys. So it kind of resonates with them a little. But you know, again, we're divided as well as you guys are politically. So there's a lot of to the left type leaning people down there. So they, you know, again, narrative, you know, divide and conquer.
But the people on the left, what is their perspective on the migrant caravan?
Oh, support it. You know, open the borders. You know, let them through.
But they're not boots on the ground.
No. Well, not that they're not boots on the ground. Their cities are not the ones that are hosting all of these people.
Right. They're not right there while it's going down. They don't have a realistic perspective of
it. So
it's a narrative.
So imagine this caravan came into TJ and affected the businesses, the cross-border and tourism business of all the people that live there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of businesses actually closed down because of these people coming in.
Really?
And the only reason they came in, you know, was to disrupt and create an international scene, which is exactly what they did.
So did they plan on actually trying to get across, or?
They were planning on jumping the fence and claiming asylum on the other side. And the famous Lady Frijoles that I kind of made famous on my Instagram account, she jumped the fence, claimed asylum, went to Texas, and then her and her sister assaulted somebody somewhere, and then she got arrested, got deported probably. So, you know. That's kind of the story of these people. And then you would attract some of these people on social media. So they would be all poor in the Maverick Caravan videos they would have on the news. And then you would see them on their social media accounts from back home, like Louis Vuitton bags and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-mm.
Maybe a fake one, but still, you know, they were fronting.
They're flossing.
You know, it's a weird dynamic on the border. And as far as I think it's being utilized in a lot of ways as a political type thing is currently because of the president you guys have up here.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they do make an effort to not go into tourist areas, into resort areas, and
the
cartel.
Well, this is the thing, because they own it or they have investments in it. That's why.
Oh, you know. So like if you go to Punta Mita or something like that, you think they have investments?
They it's in their best interest to have things, you know, quiet.
Yeah.
A lot of people, so I do a lot of training, do a lot of classes and stuff like that, travel safety things. And people are amazed with some of the cases that I bring forth that they think they're going to get abducted or drugged by the cartels in some discotheque somewhere down there.
Yeah.
And it's usually Americans traveling down there, doing their thing down there against other Americans and then coming back up. It's perfect, you know, crime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Oh, didn't that happen with a guy who killed his girlfriend down there?
Yeah, there's a case, something like that, I think somewhere in the Caribbean, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, that would be a good way to get rid of somebody. Like, a lot of those cases. Oh, we made a mistake. The cartel got her. I miss her so much, man.
A lot of the druggings that happened there, down there during the spring break type era, time frame, it's always Americans against Americans kind of doing that stuff. And people think it's the cartels are drugging people. No, it's Americans just taking advantage of the whole being in the foreign land type thing.
I was staying with my family in Punta Mita at the Four Seasons, and we had these golf carts, and you could take the golf carts out of the resort, and they're like, "Can we take the golf carts to the town?" They're like, "Sure, go ahead." We leave the resort. The first thing you see is a military vehicle armored with soldiers standing at the border of the fucking Four Seasons with machine guns on the roof of this thing, standing there ready to rock in case anything goes down.
Yeah. Probably waiting for the rival cartel guys to come through. You know? So, again, a lot of these people legitimized their businesses years back, so a lot of the money in those resorts probably traced it back to cartel interests.
Wow. Yeah. So it's just deep. It permeates the entire culture.
Yes, it's part of the business model, and you know, a lot of the money that moves around down there, there's some sort of relationship with it.
Jesus Christ, man, it's got to feel for a guy like you who gave your blood, sweat, and tears and was a part of trying to stop this. It must feel so strange to watch this nightmare sort of play out.
You know, my, so being up here, and most of my friends for some reason, I have attracted so many like Marines to my life. I don't know why. You know, I have a few SEAL friends, and mostly just crazy Marine guys. And I've been learning about what post-conflict is, post-conflict or being a veteran, a combat veteran, is through them, through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like post-traumatic stress disorder and stuff like that, is TBI, are things that I didn't even know were a thing till I came up here.
No one talks about it in Mexico.
It doesn't exist. It's not, you know.
It's not discussed.
No, if you go into a situation and you, you know, do something somewhere, you get a few days off, you know, and that's about it. You come back to work.
Wow.
And medical wise, you know, you like I've been discovering all these issues I have from that experience down there. And it's
like, what kind of issues?
You know, my nose has been pretty substantially destroyed. And my I have a few, you know, head injuries. And you know, I didn't know what they were. You know, it's stress, you know, wear on the body. It's my age. I'm 36. I shouldn't be feeling like this, you know?
Mm.
And through them, they kind of pointed me into like, you probably have this because this is what I had because I was in Iraq. It's like, I wasn't in Iraq.
You know? Might as well have been in Iraq.
Well, that's the thing. And also, you guys recognize your veterans. Not enough. There's no such thing as a veteran down there. You know, somebody, one of my asshole friends, Marine friends, gave me a Mexican drug war veteran hat because all those guys had their own hats. You know, so I think he gave me this Mexican drug war veteran hat and had an eagle, you know, being strangled by a snake, and it was pretty funny. You know, but it made me realize how there's a bunch of guys down in Mexico that done amazing things. And they get no recognition because it's a war that they deny.
Right.
There's nothing happening. There's no war happening. This is the cartels, but there's no war, you know. Even the current president said, you know, this is the end of the drug war because I said so, kind of thing. Oh, so there's no war anymore. Okay, because why? The war is over.
Did you have any involvement? This is barely related. But did you have any involvement or know anybody that had any involvement with those Mormon cults that are down there?
Yes. I do know people that in the Juarez region, that some of the Mitt Romney's family members in that region area. Yeah, I know some federal police guys and military guys that were curious about the amount of firearms that these guys had because they had some, they basically fought the cartels off.
How crazy is that?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting being there and finding a white guy that speaks amazing English and it was born in Mexico.
And they're Mormons.
And they have to get like a visa to travel to the U.S.
People don't know that like Mitt Romney's dad, the reason why Mitt Romney's dad never ran for president is because he was born in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of white Mexicans, which is another weird thing that people don't know about.
Sure. Canelo.
Louis C.K.
Yeah, Louis C.K.
Mexico. Yeah. Canelo, yeah. Anybody that's of Irish ancestry, if you go into a bar in Mexico, some bars in Mexico, you can probably get some free drinks if you tell them you're Irish, because the Irish betrayed the Americans in the last Mexico-American War. And a lot of them stayed down there and married some of the locals.
I got an Irish last name. I'm one quarter Irish.
That's how you got a Canelo, probably, right? The Mormon community in that area, basically a few of their members got abducted.
Yeah.
And the cartels were, you know, wanted to do more against them. And these guys apparently got some high-powered long-range rifles. And they were shooting at these people from afar. And they set up this whole security apparatus around their town. And the Mexican government basically looked the other way and kind of said, well, it's fine. Just don't get too crazy with it. Mm-hmm. There was some sort of interaction as far as them trying to appease things with them, you know, because realistically the town that they made out there is a paradise. I mean, amongst other towns in that area, it's a beautiful place.
Really?
It's a beautiful place. Very organized.
What is it called? Is this it, Jamie? This is their Mormon little town. So what kind of military do they have that protects this town? Like, have they made their own military?
So I actually got to do a few reconnaissance things there. Just is passing by. And what I saw that they had were a bunch of basically machine gun nests on some of the hilltops. And they limited the amount of access points to that little town. So they had basically their...
What happened when the people got abducted?
I think one of them got killed. And then, you know, they wanted to kill other people. And there was this whole thing. They went to the government for help and they didn't say anything. So somehow they, you know, procured firearms down there. So they started defending their own.
What a strange story that is. Because they left the United States when polygamy was illegal.
Yes.
When they started making polygamy illegal in Utah, they went, well, we'll just go to Mexico. Because back when they did it, there wasn't even cars. Yeah. So it was like no big deal to live in Mexico. Like, you're riding a fucking horse no matter where you are.
Yeah.
No difference.
No.
So they said, we'll go over here.
But it is a nice, I mean, again, it's a weird American-like town in the middle of Juarez. I mean,
how many people?
Coahuila. It's probably in the thousands, tens of thousands maybe.
People, wow. You know?
Yeah.
All Mormons.
All Mormons and a lot of Mexican converts now. So
really?
Yeah. There's a lot of Mexican converts down there as well. So.
And are there more than one family, more than one of these towns?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of family names in that region. They're kind of famous, you know.
Wow.
I think one of the barons are one of those.
But it's only this one town?
It's one of there's a few out there. There's a few out there. There's a few Mormon communities out there.
Wow. And it's all the same sort of deal.
Yeah.
Armed to the tits.
Discreetly armed, you know. I don't know if it's as open as it was, but it's. It, back then, when it was really rowdy, they were openly doing, you know, things to keep people from not coming to their town.
And they're full on Mexican citizens.
Yes.
Wow.
But they speak English and they're white, so it's.
They don't speak Spanish?
Some of them do, but they don't need to because they live in this community. And they don't go out of it a lot, so you know, it's a weird place.
That's fucking really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's like. And when you're over here and you look, do you see it any differently from looking at it, looking at the situation over there and how crazy Mexico is from America, like how ignorant Americans are to how bad it really is?
Yeah. I mean, so I've been up here for 4 years now as a resident, right? And I came up here at the weirdest time probably in U.S. history as far as, you know, when I was going through my immigration process, Trump, you know, got elected. So it was pretty interesting, you know. You know, being pulled to both sides of the political spectrum, you know. And seeing how people would talk about Mexico in ways that were, like, irrealistic or, you know, just weird things that you would hear. It's like, that's not how it is. You know, that's not how it happens.
Like, what's a big misconception?
That it's a Mexico problem only, and that the influence and the cartels aren't here in the U.S. too. You know, they're everywhere. You know, it's not the border thing is like that's the border, but they're on both sides. You know, there's definitely cartel here in the U.S. So then most Americans thinking of it as a foreign problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's foreign if you live far from the border, maybe, you know. But you know, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. That's one thing that I always see, like, you know, and also that it's a problem that Mexico should fix itself. You know, that's a lot. I also hear that. No, they should fix their own shit.
Yeah.
But their own, you know, the problems down there, you know, stem from firearms and money coming from up here and a big drug market and, you know, the money going into some corrupt hands down there at times and basically them burning the manual every 6 years and just starting anew on their fight. And the cartels.
Does anybody else say this other than you? Like, does anybody say that politically over there?
There's a few people. I was actually in charge of the governor of Baja's security detail for 2 years, almost 3 years. I was put there because he was a very good friend of Felipe Calderon. He was his compadre. And he was very high level, and you know there was a lot of threats in his life. And again, he was heading up the tip of the spear for the counter-cartel operations in the whole of Mexico. And he implemented a plan in TJ that was then replicated throughout the country. And he would be very vocal in his, you know, counter cartel rhetoric and how we could do better and how we should all work together. He developed these groups called boom groups. Basically, Army, Municipal Police, State Police, all of them working together in these operations groups and just going out there. And it's the jurisdiction of everybody here to do whatever we need to do. And he was pretty, you know, instrumental. His name was Osuna Miyan. And he's out of politics now. And he had a lot of threats on his life. And it was pretty interesting working with him. He's one of those people think that all politicians are corrupt down there. It's not true. There's some good ones. He was one, definitely. I worked directly with him. And I could tell you that he was one of those good ones. And Lieutenant Colonel Lizaola, who's now running for mayor of Tijuana, he's one of those vocal guys. There's a reason why he's been they've tried to kill him 9 times, you know. He's saying something. You know, he represents something, right? There are good people down there willing to fight. It's just that, you know, there's a lot of more bad people willing to kill.
You must have seen some horrific shit over the course of your career.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Bodies, the brutality, the torture, all that type of stuff down there. Again, I tell people, working down there is the closest thing to the Wild West you have currently. It's basically... And when people say third world country, there's a lot of cosmopolitan places just across the border that aren't necessarily alien to American eyes, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine all this, you know, crazy things happening down there. Like there was a famous firefight in Tijuana, the Cupola, which is basically there was a big cartel stronghold inside of this castle type thing. You know, it had a big giant dome on top of it. La Cupola shootout. And when that happened, basically everybody responded to this thing, and it was next to a school and kids were being evacuated from it. It was pretty horrific. A lot of the people on the inside, they had a lot of people abducted on the inside, and they basically executed all of them. And some of the people on the inside with the cartel guys would put zip ties on themselves and, you know, kneel down the ground so you would think it was them. And you saw uniformed police officers inside of there shooting outside to uniformed police officers. So you would see how the crazy corruption and, you know. Wow. LA shootout happens, bank robbery, 2 guys with AK-47s.
North Hollywood, that one?
Militarized the whole policing in the United States. That type of thing happens in Mexico every day, and nothing happens, nothing changes. You know, that's the crazy part. You know, how that just is part of the normal now down there. Nothing changes.
No adjustments.
No adjustments. No evolution. You know, these guys used to roll around dressed as cops with cloned vehicles, and now they roll around in taxi cabs and are more discreet in how they move. These guys used to use drug mules and drug tunnels. Now they use unmanned drones and other means to cross their drugs. So they're always kind of evolving and adjusting. And the government is trying to smash it with a hammer for the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Just whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole.
What made you start your Instagram account? Because your Instagram account is excellent. It's Ed Manifesto, and it's all you talk so much about the problems that are going on over there, and you also do a lot of situational awareness stuff. You show, like, what's wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
What do you see here?
Yeah. Main thing was when I started, I was still active down there. So it was kind of like a reporting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to share things with people to try and, you know, raise awareness. But after that, it became more of a thing of I just spent over a decade working in this environment down here, and I have nothing to show for it. So I need to take that experience and make it worth it for people. To share some of that experience with other people and to make it, you know, just to make it, I had to justify it to myself. Just, I need to make it worth my while to having done that.
There's not a lot of people doing what you're doing though.
No. I think the strange thing about me is my English and the fact that I worked on the border. So I had the opportunity to cross that border and, you know, share some of those experiences up here. Like, I've been to the FBI Academy, surreal, you know, this kid from TJ is now at the FBI Academy showing some weird shit to some weird people. Secret Service Academy, some of your SF guys have, you know, contacted me, and I've done work for them, and I show them, like, wow, Ed, like, that trick to get out of handcuffs, that's pretty cool. Where did you learn that? Like, who showed you that? 15-year-old kid, you know, and TJ showed me how to flip handcuffs and weaponize them. That's pretty gnarly.
Flip them and weaponize them?
Yeah, so there's ways of releasing your handcuffs and flipping the side of the arm of the handcuff so it looks like it's still on, but it isn't. And somebody approaches you, and you flip it open and use that thing as a meat hook. And a 15-year-old kid showed me that after he tried to apply that on one of our guys. And that's the stuff I wrote on in my little manifesto. It was basically a manifesto. It was a notebook. Mm-hmm. I would write all these things down, document most of them. And when I would come over here to the U.S. to do training, like I did some training with NCIS and Coronado during my career. And some of those guys were team guys, SEAL guys. That's how I met a few of them. And they were like, hey, Ed, this is how we do like executive protection in the Middle East. I was like, wow, that's how we do it right across the border right down here. Like, what? Yeah? What? Really? Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. And, you know, we'd show them a flash drive with a bunch of pictures from stuff down there, and they would, like, be blown away by it. And sharing information and kind of that, basically making use of that experience. A lot of people down there are mute. They don't share that experience. They don't think it's worth anything. I think I realized that that experience in that gnarly place is worth something, to at least as far as sharing it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people think that. You know, kind of, you know, we downplay ourselves. We have this problem in Mexico. Most Mexicans are very doubtful about themselves. You know, there's a, like, we're Mexicans, like, what would we have to share with these high-level guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being in a place like that, low means, low equipment, low training, being creative, that's a lot of things that come up from those, that experience and being, you know, solution-wise as far as, you know, keeping safe.
Well, I think part of the problem with the United States and Mexico is our view of Mexico. And someone like you, what you provide is a realistic perspective and real information, real photographs, real stories. Go and just enough, and then this conversation, just enough where enough people hear it, it'll shift the idea of what is happening in Mexico a little bit.
I mean, thank you for this invitation, and I
thank you.
I have I have this weird comparison that I have with you as far as, you know, this podcast. I've listened to it way back when, you know. And I remember this whole feeling of being around a campfire and hearing, you know, people talk about their things and kind of, you know, passing the pipe. That's just, it's pretty interesting. It's something I've only kind of seen as far as exchanging information of that, like around campfires or shamans or sweat lodging type situations down there. A lot of our guys were native, so I would get invited to these sweat lodges and stuff like that. You know, you get that exchange of information. But yeah, definitely start talking about it. That's the first step. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it because of fear. You know, people are like, hey, aren't you afraid of talking about this? So I was afraid for 12 years. Yes, I am. But I know that nobody else is going to. So if not anybody else, you know.
Well, if you stop and think about how many guys have worked on the border, how many guys have worked in these counterinsurgency operations, and how few are talking about it.
And how many of them died, nobody knows who they are.
Or right.
How many are still out there, nobody knows who they are. Or, you know, Sicario, that movie Sicario came out. You know?
Yeah.
Those people are looking at that movie. So a lot of the followers are suspicious of that. Benicio del Toro having an MP5. I was the only Mexican rocking an MP5 submachine gun down there, right? So it's like, is that, you know.
What did you think of those movies?
Oh, horrible. It's horrible. Unrealistic, you know. Like, they should, if somebody doesn't hire me, I'll do it for free. Just to, you know. I'll consult for free on that, and I'll make it look a bit more closer to what it is. But it's the main thing is everybody saw that movie, and that's how they would, you know, that's the reality, you know, how fiction is kind of a basis for reality. So Sicario 2 comes out, and it's basically the United States declaring the cartels a terrorist organization, you know? And I saw that, and I was like, usually fiction kind of has a way of influencing reality further on the line, you know? That Denzel Washington movie called Siege, where a bunch of terrorists attack New York and then militarize New York, and that's kind of like a precedent for 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd see Sicario 2, and then, you know, we're going to terrorists Trump now says they're going to, they're thinking about declaring the cartels as a terrorist organization. That's pretty interesting. Mainly because, realistically, Mexico has been calling them terrorists forever.
You know, yeah, what did you think about that, about Trump doing that? Do you think that that actually is something that could happen?
If you're going to militarize efforts against it, not just consider it a law enforcement type situation, I think people should be afraid down there if you do go that route. But just realize that's going to be open warfare, not in a foreign country across the ocean. It's going to be right next to your border.
Yeah, where people can walk across.
Yes, or make things happen down there that will affect you up here in a very real way, you know?
And it'll get ugly before it gets better.
I hopefully it doesn't, you know, but that's realistically.
But if that doesn't happen, if they don't treat it as a terrorist organization and try to have some sort of impact on it, what could be done?
I mean, I think culturally they're trying to get us ready for that, you know. I don't know. I mean, I think that's what's happening. You see a lot of the cross, you know, borders, U.S. military assets training Mexican Marines down there and having an open relationship with them. You see that, and that the push is to maybe, you know, preparing for something. You know, I think they're preparing for something. You know, what could that be? I don't know.
So what we get about it publicly is just a small sliver of the actual conversations that are being had.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of, you know, misdirection. You know, there's a lot of misdirection that I see in my
huge.
Yeah.
But listen, Ed, I really appreciate you coming down here and enlightening us and telling us all about this. And I really appreciate your Instagram account. The Instagram account is Ed Manifesto. What else do you have? Social media?
Ed's Manifesto on Facebook as well. And edsmanifesto.com.
All right. Beautiful. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming in here. Thank you. Bye, everybody.